You know, the Bible is full of interesting characters. One was an assassin named Ehud. And you can find his story in Judges. I'm not going to go to that story this morning, but it's in Judges chapter 3, verses 12 to 30. You see, after 18 years of serving Eglon, the king of Moab, the Israelites began to pray for a deliverer. And God answered their prayers by raising up Ehud from the tribe of Benjamin. His first official act was to lead a delegation of Jews to deliver the tax to King Eglon. Unknown to his traveling companions, Ehud had a two-edged dagger concealed under his clothes on his right thigh. After he delivered the tribute, Ehud returned to Eglon's palace pretending to have a secret message from God for the king. Eglon was flattered by this and sent everyone from the room and then locked the door. And when the king stood up, Ehud stabbed Eglon under his ribs, striking a fatal blow. Ehud escaped through the back window, and by the time anyone learned what had happened, Ehud brought back an army to defeat the Moabites and free the Israelites. What does that have to do with a sermon on the pursuit of relationship? Well, not much except this. Today, we want to talk about assassins. They don't carry daggers, but they're assassins just the same. In our text, Paul identified four assassins. We can call them love killers because of the damage that they inflict on loving relationships. Chances are you've felt the pain of one of these attacks on your relationships. Love tends to transform harshness into tenderness, and it transforms selfishness into graciousness. It even helps us to overlook character flaws in other people and relationships. But when relationships get established, we sometimes forget to practice that love. Even worse, we allow assassins to destroy relationships. And we need to guard our relationships against these love killers. If you have your Bible, you turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're going to again look at verses 4 through 8. In this message I've entitled, Love is Gracious. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things. Love never fails. Well, let's take a look at these love killers, these assassins. They're in verse 5 of 1 Corinthians 13. Love killer number one is rudeness. Does not behave rudely. I mean, think back to the beginning of a relationship. You were probably, at that point, on your best behavior. As time passes, we're tempted to take others for granted and to treat them differently. Someone wrote that familiarity breeds contempt, or at least indifference. If we give in to that temptation, we can harm those that we love by very inappropriate behavior. You see, when you're thinking about this, the first thing you think about is rudeness. Rudeness itself, it means to suffer shame. Rudeness means to suffer shame. The word rudely means to suffer shame because of one's outward behavior. But love doesn't embarrass others publicly. God's love doesn't embarrass others publicly. Unfortunately, this kind of behavior has become far too commonplace in both our culture and in our relationships. The director of the National Commission on Civic Renewal has said there is an overwhelming consensus among American people that basic norms of good conduct have deteriorated in this country. Now that is an understatement. And you may have noticed it on the highway. You may have noticed it at the ball games or in a restaurant. Common courtesy is uncommon in our very me-first society. So rudeness means to suffer shame, and love defends against rudeness by being courteous. Love defends against rudeness by being courteous. You know, there's an interesting parallel to this in Exodus chapter 32 and verse 25. You see, writing of the day that the Israelites danced around the golden calf, Moses wrote down these words. He said, "The people were unrestrained." The people were unrestrained. Boy, in that phrase, "the people were unrestrained," it means that they acted with shamelessness and in an improper way. They acted with unrestraint. Boy, did that speak to our society today, to the world that we live in. You know, love acts with grace, and it acts with respect toward others, especially toward those who are in our closest relationships. Those relationships that often we can begin to take the other person for granted and treat them with rudeness and not be concerned. The love defends against rudeness by being courteous. The second love killer is selfishness. Love killer number two is selfishness. Paul says that love does not seek its own. Selfishness in relationships creates an unhealthy competition. And rivalry destroys trust, and it destroys satisfaction. A young couple were seeking counseling about a conflict relating to the handling of money in their marriage. While he always dressed professionally, regardless of the cost, she felt comfortable in casual attire. And because of that, she resented the amount of money that he spent in order to look good. In order to equalize the situation, each week she would total the amount of money he spent on himself in the checkbook, and she would write a check for that amount to herself. Selfishness bred rivalry. Rivalry bred conflict. Conflict bred distrust. And distrust damaged their love for each other. And in contrast, Paul declares that love is not self-centered. I mean, just consider for a moment the meaning of that phrase, "love does not seek its own." Paige Patterson writes, "Love doesn't seek its own advancement, but that of the object of its love." Did you hear me? Love doesn't seek its own advancement, but that of the object of its love. That means that we're more concerned about the other person in the relationship than we are about ourselves. We don't seek to advance ourselves, we seek to advance them. We invest more in them than we invest in ourselves. But that's not natural. It's neither natural nor easy. Selflessness is a learned value that Christians must cultivate as their love matures. Conductor Leonard Bernstein, he once said that the hardest instrument to find in an orchestra is the second fiddle. Because everybody wants to be first. Compare that to the words of the New Age guru, Shirley MacLaine. Quote, she said, "The most pleasurable journey you take is through yourself. The only sustaining love involvement is with yourself. The only thing you have is working to the consummation of your own identity. And that's what I've been trying to do all my life. Boy, that's selfishness. Our cultural obsession with ourselves has infected every aspect of life. Chuck Colson tells of a book by sociologist Robert Bella that examined the prevailing value of ethos or the ethos of American society. Bella identified radical individualism as our deepest held value. We want to be our own person. And that's our deepest value as Americans. He also asked what people expect from institutions. From business, they expect personal advancement. From marriage, they expect personal development. And from church, they expect personal fulfillment. We can describe that value with one word: selfish. Love defends against selfishness by putting others first. Love defends against selfishness by putting others first. Jonathan, the son of King Saul, he pursued this quality of putting others first in his relationship with David. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 1 through 3, it reads, "Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. And then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul." You see, Jonathan knew that David would become the next king. Jonathan knew that David would become the next king. Instead of seeking his own self-advancement, he chose to be a supporter rather than a rival. Very important. So, love defends against selfishness by putting others first. Love killer number three is rage. Paul says, love is not provoked. The King James Version adds a very interesting dimension to that phrase. It says, is not easily provoked. Compare that with all the anger that we see in our culture today. I mean, we read about what? Road rage? We read about airplane rage? We read about sports rage? And even, particularly on Black Friday, shopping rage in the department stores. In fact, one newspaper headline read, "Rage is the rage of the day." Our culture is easily provoked. And what's worse, most people feel justified in their outbursts against others. They feel it's okay. They feel it was justified. And many relationships disintegrate as a result of those violent explosions. You see, love doesn't make rash judgments. Basically, love does not make judgments without knowing all the facts. And when the facts are unclear or unknown, love assumes the best. That's how love operates. Love doesn't make quick, rash judgments, and then if everything isn't clear, we assume the best. Assume the best. Love doesn't make rash judgments. Also, love defends against rage by what? By trying to understand. Love defends against rage by trying to understand. You know, problems, well, I have to say this, problems and adversity are part of life. They're part of life. If you haven't experienced any yet in your life, don't worry, they're coming. Problems and adversity are a part of life. But remember, trouble can become a wedge in your relationships, or it can be the glue of those relationships. It all depends on how you respond to it. A mature love seeks to attack the problems, not the person. Maybe we should learn from the funeral home director, who said after 25 years and 5,000 burials, Thomas Lynch said this. He said, I want to resolve conflict a little quicker because I'd seen people go off to work who don't come home. Because there's such a bent in our society to be easily provoked. Instead of bursting into a verbal tirade, we need to learn to practice Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1, which says a soft answer turns away wrath. Guidepost magazine told of a young man driving his father's car that had a wreck in a race with his buddies. And the father was about to explode, but before he spoke, the mother asked, "Are you okay?" And her soft answer refocused the conversation on what the main issue was. And her love withheld judgment, and it ended up diffusing all that anger. And then finally, number four, love killer number four is resentment. Love killer number four is resentment. Paul says that love thinks no evil. Another translation reads, which I prefer, is it reads, does not keep a record of wrongs. Love does not keep a record of wrongs. That could be paraphrased as, you know, love doesn't keep a diary of disappointments. You know, people will disappoint us and they'll hurt us. And as a defense mechanism, we often hold those failures against them. And eventually, the unresolved pain leads to resentment. But love sees the need to forgive the offender. Love doesn't plan retaliation. You see, the phrase thinks no evil or does not keep a record of wrong, it comes from accounting. You know, it basically could be stated as does not keep books on evil. Adding up the evils that were done, keeping a record of wrongs, harboring resentment, threatening retaliation. I mean, have you ever thought about your memory? I can't remember. But have you ever thought about your memory? You know, studies suggest that our ability to remember something depends upon three things. Our ability to remember something depends on A, its frequency. Number two, how recently it occurred. And then C, how connected the event is to other information that's stored in our minds. So remembering requires a degree of mental exercise. Traumatic events cause you to frequently relive them mentally. And so the point of all this is that to remember a hurt, you must replay it or be reminded of it over and over again. The memory of a hurtful experience fuels resentment. And to cultivate the memory of someone's failure against you is to keep a diary of those disappointments. But love, on the other hand, addresses the pain and the bitterness. And love defends against resentment with forgiveness. Love defends against resentment with forgiveness. You know, God is our example. In Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 34... it tells us that God will forgive their iniquity and their sin I will remember no more. You see, without love, our relationships can evolve into very contentious rivalries. Now, let me close with this story. On Father's Day, 1999, one of the most chilling accounts of revenge began to unfold in Franklin, Indiana. Amy Schanenberger found her 7-month-old son, Tyler, face down and dead in his crib. The coroner ruled it sudden infant death syndrome. But just hours after the little boy's funeral, Ronald Schanenberger told his wife he had killed their son as revenge. Before the couple was married, Amy refused to cut short a vacation cruise to comfort Ronald when his father died in October of 1996. Shanabarger concocted a plan to make Amy feel the way he did when his father died. In his confession to the authorities, Shanabarger said he married her, got her pregnant, allowed her time to bond with the child, and then killed their son. While Amy was at her night job of checking groceries, Shanabarger wrapped Tyler's head in plastic and then ate a snack and brushed his teeth. 20 minutes later, he removed the plastic, put the baby's face down in the crib, and then went to bed. When Amy got home, she assumed that Tyler was asleep, and so she went straight to bed. She discovered his death when she went to his crib the next morning. Shanabarger said he confessed his crime because he was haunted by the guilt of what he had done. The 30-year-old man begged officers to shoot him after making his confession. His three separate confessions have all been consistent, and detectives said relatives confirmed Shanabarger's long-standing resentment of his wife's refusal to return early from a cruise in 1996. No event or story could more clearly communicate the destructive nature of revenge. What a powerful story. You see, love killers destroy relationships. But you know what? God's ready to bring healing to all of those who will turn to Him. Love does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil.